Welcome to National Liberty Alliance's weekly call. Today is Monday, July 6th, 2026. We broadcast live every Monday from 9 p.m. to 11 p.m. Eastern Time. If you're listening in over Rumble or YouTube and you would like to ask a question or make a comment, you can go to nationallibertyalliance.org and click on our weekly call for instructions to join us live by phone, app, or browser. If anyone would like to email a question, you can send your questions to questions, that's plural, questions at nationallibertyalliance.org. Please support our business partners. You can find their banners on the right side of our website, of which the proceeds go to support NLA's effort to save our republic. Consider taking our 90-hour court access in the common law course. You can find the link on the front on our front page and in the description below. Also, please support NLA by donating $5 a month or more. Click on the donation tab on the top right side of the website. Okay, we're going to pick up with our scripture reading. Tonight's scripture reading is going to be in Hebrews chapter 11, read by Alexander Scorby. Let me see if I can get there.
Chapter 11. Now faith is the substance of things hoped for, the evidence of things not seen. For by it the elders obtained a good report. Through faith we understand that the worlds were framed by the word of God, so that things which are seen were not made of things which do appear. By faith Abel offered unto God a more excellent sacrifice than Cain, by which he obtained witness that he was righteous, God testifying of his gifts. By it he, being dead, yet speaketh. By faith Enoch was translated that he should not see death, and was not found because God had translated him, for before his translation he had this testimony, that he pleased God. But without faith it is impossible to please him, for he that cometh to God must believe that he is, and that he is a rewarder of them that diligently seek him. By faith Noah, being warned of God of things not seen as yet, moved with fear, prepared an ark to the saving of his house, by the which he condemned the world and became heir of the righteousness which is by faith. By faith, Abraham, when he was called to go out into a place which he should after receive for an inheritance, obeyed, and he went out, not knowing whither he went. By faith, he sojourned in the land of promises in a strange country, dwelling in tabernacles with Isaac and Jacob, the heirs with him of the same promise. For he looked for a city which hath foundations, whose builder and maker is God. Through faith also Sarah herself received strength to conceive seed, and was delivered of a child when she was past age, because she judged him faithful who had promised. Therefore sprang there even of one, and him as good as dead, so many as the stars of the sky in multitude, and as the sand which is by the seashore innumerable. These all died in faith, not having received the promises, but having seen them afar off, and were persuaded of them, and embraced them, and confessed that they were strangers and pilgrims on the earth. For they that say such things declare plainly that they seek a country. And truly, if they had been mindful of that country from whence they came out, they might have had opportunity to have returned. But now they desire a better country, that is, an heavenly. Wherefore God is not ashamed to be called their God, for he hath prepared for them a city. By faith Abraham, when he was tried, offered up Isaac. And he that had received the promises offered up his only begotten son, of whom it was said, that in Isaac shall thy seed be called, accounting that God was able to raise him up even from the dead, from whence also he received him in a figure. By faith Isaac blessed Jacob and Esau concerning things to come. By faith Jacob, when he was a dying, blessed both the sons of Joseph, and worshipped leaning upon the top of his staff. By faith Joseph, when he died, made mention of the departing of the children of Israel, and gave commandment concerning his bones. By faith Moses, when he was born, was hid 3 months of his parents, because they saw he was a proper child, and they were not afraid of the king's commandment. By faith Moses, when he was come to years, refused to be called the son of Pharaoh's daughter, choosing rather to suffer affliction with the people of God than to enjoy the pleasures of sin for a season, esteeming the reproach of Christ greater riches than the treasures in Egypt, for he had respect unto the recompense of the reward. By faith he forsook Egypt, not fearing the wrath of the king, for he endured, as seeing him who is invisible. Through faith he kept the Passover and the sprinkling of blood, lest he that destroyed the firstborn should touch them. By faith they passed through the Red Sea, as by dry land, which the Egyptians, assaying to do, were drowned. By faith the walls of Jericho fell down, after they were compassed about 7 days. By faith the harlot Rahab perished not with them that believed not, when she had received the spies with peace. And what shall I more say? For the time would fail me to tell of Gideon, and of Barak, and of Samson, and of Jephthah, of David also, and Samuel, and of the prophets, who through faith subdued kingdoms, wrought righteousness, obtained promises, stopped the mouths of lions, quenched the violence of fire, escaped the edge of the sword, out of weakness were made strong, waxed valiant in fight, turned to flight the armies of the aliens. Women received their dead raised to life again, and others were tortured, not accepting deliverance, that they might obtain a better resurrection. And others had trial of cruel mockings and scourgings, yea, moreover, of bonds and imprisonment. They were stoned, they were sawn asunder, were tempted, were slain with the sword. They wandered about in sheepskins and goatskins, being destitute, afflicted, tormented, of whom the world was not worthy. They wandered in deserts and in mountains and in dens and caves of the earth. And these all, having obtained a good report through faith, received not the promise, God having provided some better thing for us, that they, without us, should not be made perfect.
Okay, all right, tonight we have a special guest. We have Barry County Sheriff Dolly from Michigan. And John is going to take the host for tonight. I had you muted, John, because you were bleeding through. Maybe when you're not talking, maybe you can mute your mic. Because right now we're getting some feedback. So it's up to you to mute your mic and take it from there. But okay, John, you got the mic. And I believe Sheriff is already unmuted. Sheriff, are you unmuted here?
Oh, can you hear me?
We can hear you, Sheriff. Okay.
Okay, good.
All right, John, lead us on, and we'll take it from there.
Thank you, guys. Darlene, I've known him for about 10 years. We met with a group of people questioning traveling, and he's a man, he's a sheriff, he's also the sheriff for the commercial aspect of it, so he's got three hats he has to wear. But it's a privilege to be here tonight with Dar. We want to answer some questions. We want to talk a little bit. And we have some written questions. Dar has a copy of them. I have a copy of them. But, Dar, is there anything you want to say right off the get-go?
No, it's a pleasure being here again. I've been on the show, 3-4 times now. Appreciate it.
All right, John, if you got him, I can barely hear him. Can you speak up a little bit, Dar?
Is that any better?
A little bit, yeah.
Yeah,
maybe just get close to the mic. You're coming in on a computer, right? No, you're coming in on a phone, right?
Is this better?
There you go.
That's really good.
Much better.
Well, you know, Dar, we've talked. What happened originally, folks, is about 10 years ago, a group of guys met with Dar at a restaurant, and some of the questions we have here is about traveling as opposed to driving. And the same questions were asked at that time. What Dar said to the guys was, look, you know, this is something that my deputies are going to see, going to run into. And so what I want you to do is have some briefs written up about the driving as opposed to traveling, and we'll turn them into the Cooley Law School in Lansing. We'll turn them into the instructors over at Hillsdale and have their students investigate that. Now, he says, if we can prove you wrong, then you admit you're wrong. If we can't prove you're wrong, Then we're going to ask the state what the heck the deal was. And Dar, if I'm not mistaken, we submitted some stuff. We never got a reply. Is that correct?
No, I haven't got a reply from anybody yet. Prosecutors, everybody seems to be afraid to tackle this. I guess I'm going to have to bring it into our courts. And with everything you guys have, and share it that way and see where we go. Everybody's afraid to tackle it. A lot of people say, oh, it's been beat up to death. Hate to break the news to you, but it's the way the guys are trained right now.
Right. Well, the thing that's frustrating is, I mean, you're like I mentioned, you're a sheriff for the people, for the common law, and also for the commercial aspects of it. And they're basically treating us all as commercial carriers. Where they're treating us as corporations, and I know...
No, John, they're not. They're treating you as sovereign citizens, and what they're teaching on sovereign citizens, I think, is horrible. It makes the officers all edgy and make them not want to listen, take you into custody faster. We just had a guy, I've never heard him call himself a sovereign citizen, down in South Carolina, who got in a shootout with the police, and... he got a bullet in the head, and one of the deputies got a bullet in the head. So I just want to warn you guys, this is the training that they're giving the law enforcement right now. It's kind of hard to explain. It's been going on since, gosh, I think I was in the academy, but it wasn't nearly as prevalent as what it is today.
So they're training the officers to be afraid of the people? Or just sovereign citizens?
Yeah, they're making them sound like they're terrorists.
If I might just pipe in something here just for a second. You know, we do have a paper going up to the Supreme Court. They did send it back. We're getting ready to send it back in again. We did read the paper, and we also read the letter that's going to be adjoining that paper. We're focusing in right now on opening the courts of law back up and corporate justice. And... after that, of course, there's a lot of things, and the right to travel is going to be one of the things we will handle. But first of all, we've got to really open up the courts of justice. And I know from the position that we've been teaching here is that if anybody gets stopped by the police, they're not the people to have a conversation with concerning this. Just take the ticket, you know, thank them or whatever you want to say, but be polite, nice, let it go by. And if you want to make your argument in the court. All right, back to you guys.
Like you're saying, I know, speaking to Dar here, and that a bunch of the guys in our group are working hard on this, and they're being proactive instead of reactive insofar as we're asking the questions to the governor, to the attorney general, you know, to the mayors, to the sheriffs. You know, how are you treating, how are you seeing me as far as the law goes, as far as the traveling as opposed to driving goes? And I, Dar, it seems to me you asked the Attorney General for an opinion on that as far as what we were trying to accomplish out here. Did you ever get a response back from the Attorney General of Michigan with how exactly they want you to enforce it? I mean, as far as the vehicles, as far as the drivers, as far as the travelers, because I know we've had multiple Supreme Court rulings that you have an absolute right to travel in the normal conveyance of the day. And so, I mean... that would certainly include the cars.
And then there's the other Supreme Court case, too. It comes right out of Kalamazoo, Michigan, where it talks about, yeah, the state does have a right to regulate that because, kind of in a nutshell, we got cars and motorcycles that do 200 miles an hour. And, you know, if you're afraid to go walk across the street to go get your mail because you think somebody's going to run you over, that's... in a nutshell, what they were trying to get across. And, you know, I understand it. You know, the common law, we're not supposed to be injuring any other party. And an injury doesn't mean a physical injury. So the law enforcement is looking at that case out of Kalamazoo. And I, for the life of me, I cannot remember that case, what the name of it is. But it is not that old. If anybody knows it, I'd be more than happy to... have you let us know what it is. And so anyway, that's what they're teaching at the law enforcement. They're not teaching the other stuff. They're not teaching the other big cases from way back.
And quite frankly, I'd rather you guys not argue with my guys on the road when they got other vehicles driving by on a traffic stop within 3-4 feet of them.
Well, that's good. That's a good point. And, you know, one of the things I like to make a note of is there are many, many, many U.S. Supreme Court decisions concerning this, the right to travel. But they're going to ignore it, and things. It's in contradiction to their rules, because the Rules Enabling Act, which gave the Supreme Court the power to write civil law, actually, and write also, well, first of all, gave them the right to write their rules, and through that, they gave themselves the right to write civil law, and therefore, we're under civil law right now, because they abrogated the common law. There's way too much money to be made in this situation here, and that's why it's a very difficult thing. We're not going to solve this problem until we get the courts of justice back, and again, that's what we're pursuing here at National Liberty Alliance. Once we accomplish that goal, then we can go forward on issues like this and many, many other issues that we can go up against them in the Supreme Court, and we should win again. But first, we have to get a Court of Justice back. We have to, really get rid of the Rules Enabling Act, which was totally unconstitutional.
How old is that act?
The Rules Enabling Act came out in 1938. Let me think about this. I think it was 1938. No, Rules Enabled 1934.
34, yeah.
38, the Supreme Court came out with their rules. I did see a rule that they came out earlier than 38, but anyway, everything that I've seen was 38. And that's when they abrogated the common law. They abrogated the rules of the common law. They moved us over to civil law. And I can get you a lot of information on this, Sheriff, if you want it.
Well, you know, through the Northwest Ordinance here in the Northwest, Midwest here, we're all, the five states were made in the Northwest Ordinance, we're absolutely guaranteed the common law. And that's first and foremost in the thing. Now, the statutes, I want to say that now, the statutes and the rules that they came up with are not unconstitutional as who they apply to. They just don't apply to the common man or woman on the thing. It's interesting, if you look at the law, all those laws, they have to have a definition, and it says all persons liable for these things, or you have to do this, that, anything. And then when you get to the definition of persons, the person's an artificial entity. That's the big thing. They know how to write a law to say man or woman, but they never, ever, ever say man or woman. They say person. And it's what is said and not said sometimes are just as important, okay? So if it's not included, it's excluded. And if they don't say man or woman, that doesn't apply to you.
Well, the whole thing is a fraud, of course, but it's all about money, and it's not going to stop, and it's going to continue until we take back our courts, and we can't take back our courts until we take back the federal courts first, and then, of course, the state courts and so on thereafter. But that's where it's really at. That's the problem we have to solve is, the Rules Enabling Act, which again, That gave more power. We the people ordained and established the Constitution for them to control them. And what they did, what the legislator did, is they took on to themselves more power that we didn't give them, and gave that power over to the United States Supreme Court, which we didn't give them either. And then they received that power and then exercised that power. And through that power, the first thing they did was they got rid of the rules of common law, then they got rid of common law, and then of course they just took total control from that point forward. They did place us under all of their civil law that was really had to do with them, and commercial activities particularly is a lot of the law that they've applied upon us. But they apply a lot of things within codes and different infractions and stuff upon the people, which they have no power or authority to do. But until we overturn that, and the only way we're going to overturn that is really for the people to become aware of this and get behind the papers going into the Supreme Court demanding our courts of justice reopen. They also, through the Rules Enabling Act, through the rules that the court came out with, they took away all of the common law writs for the sovereign. So we lost about four or five different writs that was powerful for the sovereign to be able to apply in the courts, and then they would have to respond to that. they no longer have to respond to those writs. They ignore them because they've abrogated them too. So we're in the big thing to save the nation really is an education.
You know, one of the questions we have here, and it's like I mentioned before, what they say and what they don't say, but Article 1, Section 10, it says, according to Article 1, Section 10, Clause 1 of the Constitution, a valid state cannot make anything other than gold, silver or gold a tender in payment of debts. As all states take FRNs as tender in payment of debts, this and their DUNS numbers clearly show that all current states and their franchise counties are imposter corporations, not the government. But one thing is interesting there because it says in the Constitution, they shall make nothing but gold or silver coin tender in payment of debt. But the legal tender laws, it's not a tender in payment of debt, it's a tender for a debt. If we just did nothing but enforce that, unless the federal government makes gold or silver coin, which is the lawful money, they can't enforce any fines or fees because they can take the paper if you want to give it to them, but they can't enforce it. I think that's interesting. But that was that one question he or she confused tender payment of debts with tender for a debt. So we have to pay attention to words because words are important.
John, they are enforcing it.
Pardon?
They are enforcing it.
Well, they're enforcing the paper, but they're like I'm just saying is that they can take it, they can accept the paper, but they can't make it. If you ask them if they want payment and they said they want payment, they can't enforce anything but gold or silver coin as a tender in payment of a debt. That's important part there.
Yeah, but that's no longer a guarantee because they ignore that. They're not going to give you gold or silver.
Well, they're ignoring everything. Like you say, I'm not sure what's the
people don't realize how serious it is. I mean, you know, I talk to a lot of people. We try to get a lot of people involved, but they don't really understand because a lot of people seem to think, well, we got Trump now. Trump's going to save us, you know. Look, Trump's going to bring things back to a certain order, but he can't, and he might even be able to turn the courts around to some degree. But if the people don't get educated, just like Jefferson said, you know, if people expect to be ignorant and free, forget about it. It's not going to happen. Of course, I was paraphrasing that. But in any event, you know, if the people don't get educated and come to an understanding and step up and get involved in their local communities through committees of safety, being the true committee men, we'll never get a republic. We'll never be able to hold our republic. That's the key. And that's what Benjamin Franklin said or meant when he told some individual after they discovered what kind of a government we were going to have, and he says it's a republic if you can keep it. A republic requires an educated people. So the people have to become educated in order to exercise their unalienable rights of government by consent. And they have to know how to do that too. But people don't know how to do it. And that's what they need to learn.
You know, it's interesting you talk about that, but democracy. I defy you to find the word democracy in the Constitution. It's not there.
Well, there is no democracy, and that's why anybody that's proclaiming democracy should be removed from power ultimately. But unfortunately, even the good people don't even understand we're not a democracy. We're a republic. The Constitution says it guarantees us a republican form of government. So that's how Trump is going to get rid of this clown down in New York City and many other communists, because they're turning our government, and it is a conspiracy. They're working together. They're connected. The money is flowing. So that's how he's going to be able to get rid of them, because they're turning a republic into a socialist or a communist way. But the truth is still the same about a democracy. We're far from a democracy. Just because we elect our representatives by popular vote does not make us a democracy. But in any event, this is the problem we have. It's a problem of education. Everything gets back to an education. Everything.
Well, proper education, please.
That's a good point.
I've coached and I've taught martial arts for years. And I ask my students, does practice make perfect? And they say yes. And I said, no, it doesn't. They look at me dumbfounded. I said, perfect practice makes perfect.
Absolutely.
You take that same thing into the education. If you're getting taught BS the whole time, they're going to be taught, they're going to accept BS.
Well, you're absolutely right there. Here's another question for you, Dar. It says, Brenda asked, What are you doing to educate the people in common law? Do you have a web page or contact information? That was one of the questions she had.
I'm sorry, ask that again.
What are you doing to educate the people in common law, and do you have a web page or contact information?
Reality, I ship a lot of people to NLA. John wrote that book, Government by Consent. I try and push people towards that. I had one attorney from up northern Michigan there that got the book, and he says, I'm going to read it because I'm a reader. Then he went and bought Brent Winter's, The Excellence of the Common Law and the Good Book Uncooked.
Did he read them?
I'm sure he's in the process of reading them, but he says, I'm a reader. I'm going to read this stuff.
Well, I know you worked with Brent quite often on a couple of different things. I was in your office a couple of times when you were talking to him on the program. He's brilliant. He's good.
I'd like to hear back whatever response you get back from this lawyer. Lawyers are very difficult to talk to, but if they're going to read these books, it should give them a proper education. It should change his mind. He should have an awakening.
It was nice because I was asked to go up to a fundraiser up in Grand Traverse County, and I think it's about 160, 170 people there. And I gave him a PowerPoint presentation on the Office of the Sheriff, and it was the basically gave a history of the sheriff and the Second Amendment. And it was most of the material I got from Brent, and I have done looked up what Brent uses as references, and he's spot on. And that attorney represents the Michigan Coalition of Responsible Gun Owners. So he's basically Michigan's NRA's. That's Michigan's NRA, Michigan Coalition of Responsible Gun Owners. He is their attorney. He approached me afterwards, and he says, very rarely does anybody school me on the Second Amendment, and you just did. And I gave him the history of it from all the way back to the 12 tribes of Israel. And it was funny because that 160, 170 people, it was quiet as a mouse. I did not get interrupted. It was, they were like sponges. I even left them with the PowerPoint presentation I had for them. I left it with them to share this.
They're hungry. Another question here.
If you get a chance, Sheriff, maybe you can email me a copy of that PowerPoint. I'm interested in that myself.
Sure.
And thanks.
You know, Darren, you're talking about those people being hungry, but all around Berry County is really, really interesting. Everybody knows Sheriff Darren in Berry County. They all talk to him. He talks to everybody. He's what we were looking for in a sheriff all over the country. I'll tell you that. I mean, I've seen it there. Is there another question here? Is there a working relationship between you, President Trump, and the common law sheriffs? And also, how many common law sheriffs and deputies are there in the USA? Have you any idea on that?
No, I don't have any idea how many there are. Every now and then, a new one pops up. And I grin from ear to ear because I don't feel alone anymore. State of Washington, they got them popping up all over. The Constitutional Sheriff and Peace Officers Association had another victory over there. It's funny because we were at one time by the Southern Poverty Law Center, the CSPOA was labeled as a terror group, and that we were encouraging getting militias and taking on the government and all this stuff. It's funny because I was at the conference that they were referring to, and nobody even mentioned a posse or a militia the whole conference. But nonetheless, over in the state of Washington, they passed a bill, and the governor signed it into law. But you understand, since they went to mail-in balloting, they have supermajority out of the House, their Senate. They've got the governor, they got the Secretary of State, and they got their Attorney General's office. They have the control of the courts. And it's a communist-type control. CSPO went in there, made their statements, got the people backing them, and they won their case. And what the case was is they were trying to make it where the governor can get a committee together and remove a sheriff from office. And what it all started on was is the sheriffs were refusing the state law that they couldn't help out immigration. So sheriffs were helping out immigration. And they were refusing the law that they had signed. So the governor was blowing a gasket, and he wanted those sheriffs removed. They took it all the way up to their state Supreme Court, a very liberal state Supreme Court, and the CSPOA won that argument.
How long ago was that?
That was just this year. I was asked to go there, I think it was in March, and I couldn't make it. And the sheriff stood strong, and they ended up winning that case.
And that's really good news. I'd like to put a side note in on this. You know, we here at National Liberty Alliance have a campaign for constitutional sheriffs going. And for anyone listening in, it's simply really getting a copy of the book, Government by Consent to Your Sheriff, and informing committees of safety and working with your sheriff. And, of course, we lay that all out under our Starter Committee of Safety tab right here on National Liberty Alliance. But anyway, it's extremely important that you educate your sheriff, and the best way to do it is get him the book. All right, back to you guys.
Another question I have here for you, Dar, is are constitutional sheriffs restricted by county or state? I'm thinking what the questioner is asking is, do you have any influence in the other counties next to you? Or I'm assuming that's what the question is.
Yes, I'm a six-term sheriff, so I've got a lot of experience, and I've won 99.9% of my battles. So, yeah, I got some influence. It's nice when I get a call from the director of our Sheriff's Association asking why I opposed something when the rest of the sheriffs supported it. And when I lay it on out for them about the constitutional part of it, they back off. So, yeah, I have some influence. But at the same time, the news media has done a good job, if you want to look at it from their angle, of bashing us constitutional sheriffs. So all these new sheriffs don't want to join. They don't want to take the bashing. And there's a organization out there who's trying to get us out of office. So they'll find somebody to run against you. And then they'll throw this out there that you're part of this cult or part of this terrorist group called the CSPOA. And then they'll try to get you out of office that way.
Well, you mentioned that they spent $250,000 on against you last election.
I think it's probably about $250,000, which I laughed. They didn't even move the needle. I've been here six terms. I've got very loyal support right here.
Well, I know the first time I ever saw your name, it was way in a corner of your county, and you were running for office. And that was a big sign. It says, Sheriff Dar Leaf is my sheriff. I says, all right, Sheriff Leaf is my sheriff. And you've got good support in the county. It's a pleasure to be around.
Yeah. Been an honor. Tell you.
Here's another question from Ava, I believe it is. I do have a question for the sheriff, and thank you for having him on. My questions are, why do sheriffs with all their constitutional power not exercise it? Why do most of them not do anything? They could actually be the impetus for big change in the United States.
All right, that's real easy to answer that one because you guys kind of hit on it. If you want to take your government back, you have to educate the people. You also have to educate these people that are taking in these offices, like the sheriff. They don't understand what their authority is. They don't understand what their duty is. Same thing goes all the way down to the township level. We have townships here in Michigan, and you have a township supervisor, you have a treasurer, clerk, and trustees. And Michigan has done a lot trying to centralize power to Lansing, which is our state capital. And the townships stood back and just took it. And one of my beefs in all these leaderships that we have out there is nobody wants to lead. They'd rather follow. And they don't want to stand up. They are waiting for somebody else to make a decision. I think you've heard me say this before, John. Make a decision. Be decisive. That old saying I had for years, don't be a flat squirrel. The road of life is full of flat squirrels. I couldn't make a decision. And that's what's happening right now, is nobody wants to make a decision. They'll let somebody else do it. And I hate to break the news to you, the communists are stepping up to the plate.
Well, you see this all the time, and trying to get people to come to a meeting, trying to wake up a little bit. I've seen my parents do that for 50, 60 years before they passed away. And it's hard. Like you say, we're the good news is we're in the best country in the world, And the bad news is that we're so comfortable here, we don't want to risk it. That I know, you know, the greatest generation, they say, in World War II, I mean, they risk it all and they give it all a lot, you know what I mean? But, you know, it's rules have changed, that's for sure. I'm not sure what to do about it. I don't know. I used to think I knew all the answers. Now I don't even know the questions, so.
Education. Yeah. If you look, I'm the sheriff that's been looking into this election laws, election fraud, voter fraud. I don't know how you want to have it pronounced here, but nonetheless, everybody was looking at Donald Trump, Donald Trump, Donald Trump. I sat there and I'm looking back, and of course my investigative stuff kicks in, and I'm going, is Donald Trump the smoke and mirrors that they want you to look at while they're taking over everything else? And sure enough, we had a majority at our state Supreme Court. One election, it was flipped. And it wasn't there's seven Supreme Court justices here, and we had a 5-2 majority. It flipped. It went to 4-3. Now it's 5-2 the other way. They did it in one election, and the second election is when they made it to 5-2. And then you look down to the Court of Appeals. And then let's go look at these college boards. How many people actually look at that and see how important that is? Because that's what they're feeding our children in our colleges.
Yeah, you're right.
And therein is the absolute need for not only educating, for the people becoming educated, but also getting involved in committees of safety. And then, of course, visiting the schools, you know, from K all the way through to 12 and even beyond, of course, within your county. And if we're not doing that and taking care of business and protecting our unalienable rights, protecting the Constitution, upholding it, making sure the people we have elected uphold it, if we're not doing that, we're going to lose it. And we're not doing that. And that's why we're losing it. It's time to do it.
Well, nobody knows how to do it because they were not educated. I go around to all around the country and educate the public on what is a sheriff, not a constitutional sheriff, because if your sheriff has a spot in that state constitution, he's a constitutional sheriff. And, you know, drop the mic moment right now. The trick is getting the sheriff to understand what that means. They'll run. Most people run for office because they got an axe to grind. And when they get in there, they have no idea what they're doing. When this COVID hit, we had all kinds of leaders that took a knee and kissed the ring of the WHO. And people were dying left and right. They watched their friends die horrible deaths in hospitals, and nobody stood up and said anything. Waited for somebody else to do it. And that's my spiel to all of you out there. You can't wait for other people to do it. You can't wait for Donald Trump, the white hats, whatever you want to look at them, QAnon, whatever that is. We got to do it here locally.
Well, I know you stood up. One of the questions here was about the lady over in Muskegon that kept a restaurant open, and they arrested her. And I know you were working with her a bit. The question thanked you for that. I was wondering if anything had come from that. Have you heard anything more from, I can't remember her name right now, but
Marlena.
Marlena.
She lived in Ottawa County. Her restaurant was at Allegan. And what had happened, she'd refused to close. She's from Poland. And she speaks broken English. And she saw the communism creeping into Poland, so she fled Poland to the United States because she was going to be safe from communism. She's watching the same play over and over again here that they did in Poland. So she refused. She wanted to get the public's attention. The Attorney General's office wrote her a citation. It goes on from there. I told her to move her restaurant here in Barrie County because we would have told the Attorney General's office to go pound sand, which we did. And in fact, I'm in uniform in some of these restaurants that refused to close. And I'm sure that those pictures got back to the Attorney General. This was, I don't know about the rest of you there, but my cop senses went into high gear right then and there saying, hey, something's going on. And this is not about COVID.
It's all about control, that's for sure. And people, he's telling the truth there too. He'll wear his uniform and he'll wear it proudly, and the people support him in that county.
When I made that, when they had that plot against the governor, and this is the other thing too, our sheriff's got to understand, people will follow courage. So if you find somebody who's courageous, got a backbone, educate them and see about getting them into these offices. Because when I stood up and made comments about this plot against our governor, and I knew two of the guys that got arrested, and there was no way they were smart enough to go out and, you know, carry off such a plot. And I took a lot of heat. People were asking for my resignation. None of the resignation requests come from people in my county. I got polled, and I didn't even know I got polled. I usually poll between 63 and 65%. It went up to 72% when I stood up and made the comments that, hey, these guys are innocent until proven guilty. And that's the basis, very basics of our common law. And boy, I was getting death threats at home. I got letters that were sent to me that there was no return address. We got doxxed here in the county. I mean, we're talking probably one or two calls a minute for 2 weeks straight, 24/7.
At the sheriff's office or at your house?
Sheriff's office, anything had to do with Berry County.
Mm-hmm.
All because I stood up and said, hey, wait a minute here. You got FBI going after the militia? Well, they're pretty good at entrapping. You know, I didn't say all that, but this was going through my head. So I said, hey, wait a minute, these guys are innocent until proven guilty. And we don't know if this, there was an actual plot, or if this, were they trying to arrest the governor, or were they trying to kidnap the governor? And I said, those are two different intents. And boy, I rattled off the law on citizen arrest. And then nowhere in that law does it say that if you're a governor, secretary of state, or a judge or anything like that, are you exempt? And there's people that are upset that wanted to be arrested because of what she did to the retirement homes. Took all these COVID patients and put them in these retirement homes because they said that the hospitals were getting overwhelmed. Well, we all know that was part of the BS. So I got asked twice by two different people in two different locations. One was Lansing and the other was Grand Rapids, that if they arrested the governor, when I housed her in my jail. At first, I thought they were joking, so I fired a joke back. And then when I got the second request, it was like, whoa, whoa, wait. Time out, cowboy. First of all, you're not going to get close enough to arrest any governor not without getting shot. So I had to shut that down right away, but that's why I made those comments. Were they trying to arrest the governor, or were they going to kidnap the governor? Different intents.
Well, they showed in the trial that that was all the people who were trying to run everything were FBI informants, paid informants. So it was crazy.
Yeah, this, if they had lost this case, the one up in Antrim County, they had a great entrapment case. Talking to the two guys that I knew, they said, "Oh man, they bought the marijuana, they bought the alcohol, they bought the hookers, they bought the food. They paid for their hotels." I mean, they wined and dined these guys. And then they go out and arrest them when they got them drunk or high and they're talking crap about the governor.
Yeah. Well, I hope we pray that we can take and solve these problems without violence. That'll go crazy if it gets to that point. But it's frustrating. I don't know the answers, I tell you that.
Well, you guys understand, too, when somebody becomes an informant, and what they'll do is they'll put CI in the report, CI number one, CI number two, confidential informant. Once they take on that role, they're under the same entrapment and search and seizure rules as everybody else in law enforcement. They are now an agent of that government. And that's where you lose focus, because I was reading stuff, and I knew the attorneys that were handling the case, and the stuff they were telling me, I'm going, well, we can't do that here in Berry County Sheriff's Office. The FBI can't do it because it's a federal court case that was ruled on. So that's the other problem, is that nobody was questioning that part of it.
How about the voting fraud, Dar? I mean, can you speak to that? I mean, that was all over the state, all over the country, but I mean, you saw that right in Berry County too, didn't you?
Yeah, everybody's in denial. Everybody said, oh, nothing happened here in Berry County. Well, how would you know unless you went and put your nose and checked every qualified voter and checked every ballot? And if you're going to do that, then why have these computers? You might as well just do a hand count anyways.
Right, right.
Yeah, ours started out, what changed my life and my career was a woman from one of our lakes up here. She's just north of Hastings. She brought in a picture, and what it was Fox News had a map of Michigan, and it was broke down by the counties. And you take an arrow and you click on one of those counties, and it'd tell you what the voting results were at that time. Well, how would they know what the voting results were at that time? Well, she clicked on it, and I think it was 11, a little bit after 11 p.m. So all the polls were closed, but not everybody had brought in their voting results, and not all the precincts had. And it had the Natural Law Party candidate leading Berry County with, I'm just going off the top of my head for numbers. I think it was like 9,700 numbers. Donald Trump had like 8,500, and Joe Biden had 45 or 4,300. And she thought that was a little weird, a Natural Law Party guy having that many votes in Berry County. So she took a picture of that screen and got it to me. And that's what got all the cybersecurity guys excited. He said, this is the stuff we look for. And, you know, back then I had no idea what I was looking at. And it took me a long time to grasp it. But, yeah, something was going on. And from there, the investigation has just grown and grown and grown. And what's his name? My pillow guy, Mike Lindell. He's got an 800-page report on the evidence that the 2020 election was a sham. So you get on Mike Lindell's website, or I forgot which one it is, but I'm sure it won't be hard to find, and look up that 800-page report. And there's a lot of information there.
Well, they had truckloads of ballots. They had millions of people. I say the plan is you vote early, you vote often. I think that's what you're supposed to do. Is that the rule?
Well, they changed how we voted. We had all these protections from all these years. And when George Soros got his people in the position there, they started changing the rules to make it easier to cheat. And we had the rules in place to prevent that. Well, they changed them because everybody should be able to vote. Hillary Clinton was pushing being able to vote with your cell phone. And how's that a good idea?
Well, it cuts both directions. But, yeah, this is nuts. I mean, is there, from your knowledge, are paper ballots required in the townships or in Berry County? I mean, and do you have to have them counted by the computer? I mean, we write on paper, and then you put it into a tabulator, and you have no idea what's happening from there on, you know what I mean?
And they won't let you inspect the software. They call it proprietary information. You can't inspect it.
So a private corporation,
why do we use it?
Are private corporations running our elections, is that what you're saying?
Non-government organizations, NGOs, the Electronic Registration Information Center, they handle the qualified voter files, and we'd be doing a presentation at the commissioner's meeting on the 14th on the discrepancies there. I don't see anywhere yet. I'm hoping the Secretary of State will cooperate with us, but I don't see anywhere where they separate the illegal aliens who are not allowed to vote or allowed on our juries. I don't see anywhere where they have the protections and weeding those people out of our qualified voter files yet. So, and 17 million of them come across in 4 years in the Biden era.
Yeah, and we paid for it too. That's great. You know, we paid for it. They got free food. They got free cell phones, and our grandmothers and grandfathers can't even afford medical care sometimes.
Oh, and don't forget this. You got 17 million people coming in. They're from third world countries. They're working at a McDonald's, making more money than they've ever imagined in their life. So they send money home to their families. Look at who the people have their hands in the pockets, because there's a cost to changing it from American currency to Venezuelan currency. There's a cost. You got 17 million people, and that's just the ones that come across in those 4 years. That's not the ones that have been here for years ahead of that. You got that money and that exchange, there's somebody making money on that exchange. Did I say that correctly?
Yeah.
So, yeah, there seems to be a way of money laundering everywhere you hiccup.
Oh, what is the answer, Dar? What is the answer? I'm looking for a couple other questions here.
So let me just make the announcement here for those who are interested in asking a question. The queue is open. It's a *6 and 1 if you're on a phone, and if you're on an app or a browser, should be a button there to enter into the queue. But go right ahead, John.
Hey, well, John, there was one question that we read off right at the beginning when you handed me the questions.
Mm-hmm.
No, we are not sworn in by any federal agency, sheriffs or not.
So that's just a local issue then.
Yeah, I suppose if a sheriff wanted to get sworn in, he could, but I like the separation of the powers even at the sheriff and federal level, so I don't think it's appropriate.
And you have, do all your deputies all have oath of office on file? I guess that's another question a lot of times we'll ask in our group about the oath of office.
Yes, every 4 years I swear in my deputies, my correction officers. I even swear in my cooks.
Good for you. And you swear them in, right?
I swear them in, yes.
Okay. Is that common for all different sheriffs, or do they normally have a judge do that, or don't you know?
Every 4 years we have to swear our employees in.
Mm-hmm.
Basically, every time you get elected, it's like a new sheriff coming in, even though you're the same sheriff. It's like, this is my sixth term right now.
I have another question here. It says, many citizens feel that certain legal processes, what I want to say it, including foreclosures, sometimes operate without full transparency or accountability, especially when paperwork or documentation appears unreliable. While I understand sheriffs cannot intervene in judicial matters, could you share how your office approaches situations where the public believes the legal process is being abused? How do you balance enforcing court orders with ensuring that citizens' constitutional rights are respected?
A citizen's constitutional rights? No, just your basic rights. Yeah, we're not allowed stealing, even if we are the government. Stealing is illegal. It's simple common law principle. But no, it's my job to intervene if I think something's wrong. So yes, we can intervene. I choose to do it behind a closed door between me and the judge. We can hash it out there. One of the things that I brought up early in my career is when like property taxes.
Mm-hmm.
There's one of our villages, so the guy is behind on property taxes, $8,000. So they were trying to take his $320,000 piece of property over that $8,000. And I asked, how is that legal? And they said, well, here's this statute that passed years ago allowing this. And I'm going, well, just because it passed doesn't mean it's legal. And so there's other means you can get that $8,000. Well, if I say I borrowed your lawnmower and it was a $5,000 lawnmower and I never brought it back, you wouldn't be going over and taking my land and making me pay for that lawnmower. You'd be garnishing my wage. You'd be putting all kinds of pressure for me to pay you back for that lawnmower. And everything from even if I refused, then the sheriff would come on in, take my property, have a sheriff sell the property until I paid off my debt. Well, the remainder of that would go back to the person that you did the execution of property off from. Why are we treating property taxes different? So we're still in battle on that. I thought we had it won about 3 years ago. But what was happening is you get these guys are doing the civil process. They'd call their buddy on up and say, hey, you go pay these taxes on this property right here. You might get a real cheap, a good piece of property. Now, I don't see how that's not stealing. So we're still working on that, chugging away. And I do have the ear of the state representatives. We did get our commissioners to back off on giving money to fight the government side of it. So we're winning cases or moving forward on cases.
And I think that one of the main reasons why they wouldn't do this is because of the Seventh Amendment, you know, which would allow people to require due process through a period of their their peers. So a jury trial being required, a lot of people.
And they don't want that to be imposed. And I think that's the main.
Anyway, someone's got their mic open, and we'll read it through here.
You there, Dar?
Yeah, I'm here. I could hear that too. Yeah.
All right. Well, you know, Dar, if you something like that, I mean, what is that? The eighth command: Thou shalt not steal. I mean, if they're taking a $300,000 property to settle an $8,000 debt, and they don't give the money back. Obviously, that's stealing. What could you as a sheriff do with something like that? I mean, I guess that's my question. Is it up to the person that's being stolen from to file a complaint? If they file the complaint to you, what could you do on something like that, Dar?
We could take the civil action on it for them. And this is where I get frustrated with sheriffs and prosecutors. Prosecutors think they only have the power of going after criminal stuff. And it's like, no, you guys can sue also. So just like a sheriff can, and we could sue on behalf of the people there. Maybe that's what it's going to take, is us to do that lawsuit, ask for a jury trial on it. And I don't think it'd be that difficult to convince a jury that the government's stealing here.
Well, I think it's the one of the 10 strong suggestions is thou shalt not steal more than 5% per year compounded annually. I believe that's what it says, doesn't it?
Yeah, there you go.
Unbelievable. We've got about an hour here, Doug. Do you want to? We got some more questions here, but I mean, I know one of them is more of a comment. And when we do get to the questions, I would really appreciate it if people would have a question. They can make some kind of statement to start, but please have a question on the things. We don't want to have a long, drawn out thing, but.
And let's try not to repeat the questions that's already been asked. So any of the long-winded questions you might want to skip unless you can try to break them down, John.
All right. Let's see. Yeah, this is where we're talking about that the lady had the restaurant, and you've already answered that one.
We can go to the queue if you want, and if you come up with a few.
If we run out of queue, we can go ahead and look at some of these more questions here. I know one guy in Michigan, Ron Dix, he's got quite a bit of stuff. I know him personally too, but he wants to organize a county militia to give you more support. I know you need support. A lot of people will say, you know, why don't you do this? Why don't you do that? I says, you know, it's not something he can do by himself. He needs a lot of people behind him. One question I would be interested in is, as far as deputizing people, can you only deputize people in your own county, Dar, or can you deputize people from other counties if they want to be deputized and help you?
Well, what I've done in the past is I've deputized people in my county, and then what would happen is we have this concealed pistol law. And in the concealed pistol law, if you're a posse member, reserve officer, auxiliary member, you can get this little box checked on there where you're exempt from the pistol free zones. So I had people coming in from other counties and they wanted to, I'm going to join your auxiliary. Well, we'd swear them in, they'd never show up. So finally I told them, I said, you need to get your sheriff to do that for you.
Right.
And that was kind of a wake up call for them that, you know, people in Berry County got me into this office here. And I'm loyal to my people here. You need to do the same thing as what the people did in Berry County to get a sheriff in if you like what I'm doing. And so we backed off on a lot of the stuff coming from out of the county.
grand juries, that's another question that is brought up a couple times as far as, I know we've had that in our law group, Michigan Lawman group meetings, talking about the grand juries. Do you know, are you aware of grand juries in meeting in Berry County? Are there any grand juries around there? What is the focus of the grand juries in Berry County or in other counties, you know, the sheriffs in around the country? Do you know?
No, I don't. I've had people wanting to start committees of safety, and they start out all hot and heavy, and then it kind of dies down. It's kind of like a neighborhood watch. When somebody breaks in your neighbor's house, all of a sudden everybody wants to do a neighborhood watch. And then they start getting on with their lives. They don't get together until somebody gets their house broke into again. So it's kind of like the same thing with the grand juries and the committees of safety. The people get involved, they're all excited, and they're a lot of work. So I haven't had a grand jury in my county, anybody start one up. And I got to say this here about the grand juries. When you start talking about militia duty, that's part of your duty for a militia member, is that grand juries and the petit juries or petite juries, whatever you want to call them.
Yeah, what's important for people to understand when they start to organize, for instance, committees of safety, is that there's got to be somebody there that's a good organizer. And people need to be educated in the areas that they want to. There's a lot of different focuses people can have on the different committees within the committees of safety. And so people should be getting, as educated as they can in those areas. And as knowledge increases and organizing abilities start to increase, that's when the committees of safety really will take off. And that's a hard engine to start. That is the major problem there. And so, but people need to endure and do what they have to do to the best they can, because again, if the people don't step up to take control of their country, to take control of their republic, take control of their government at every level, and it all starts local. You know, you take back your schools, you take back your towns, your villages, and you take back all the different government agencies all the way up to the state level, and then moving into the federal level, of course, through the representatives that we sent to Washington. You know, if you're not exercising those things, then of course you're not going to be able to maintain a committee of safety. And that's why we try to convince people, look, if you're going to start a committee of safety, you got to spend a lot of time here in National Liberty Alliance, because we have a tremendous amount of information. We have a breadcrumb trail leading people how to do this. Just right here on the blue bar, you click on the Start a Committee of Safety, and then follow the breadcrumb trail. And it'll lead you to all kinds of free books and different things that you need to know, the knowledge that people have to have in order to get a Committee of Safety going, how to do that, how to create a charter, to do resolutions. You got to be busy doing those things. And if you're busy doing those things, they're interesting and they're empowering, and you start to realize these things, and and that's what's going to build your Committee of Safety. So, and especially when you start taking schools back, because when you start taking schools back, and we teach people how to do that here, you want to take your schools back. The people in that particular community, in that school district, when they come to the meetings and see what you're doing there, they're going to join your committee of safety, because they're going to see the power and the necessity for we the people to do what is necessary to keep this nation. And we have to be educated and get our children a proper education and so on. So anyway...
You know, it's interesting, as I've talked to, older people, younger people, there's a lot of young guys, young ladies that I talk to that are very hungry for what the heck's going on here. We've had a lot of rot in society, but there's still a lot of good people left, and a lot of good young people, too. So that's encouraging. I can see them, talk to them all the time, and they say they're with us a lot more than you think they are. They're not totally all stupid.
No. One of the things I've done to represent schools is every now and then I get a teacher complaining that they have to call these kids by their proper pronouns. And one teacher up in county just north of me there, he was suspended for a while because he wouldn't refer to this middle schooler as a dog. And he refused. And they went after him. So when I heard that, because that's awful close to me. That's just across the county line. When I heard that, I got my animal control officer, and I said, the first parent that comes in here and allows their child to say they're a dog, you're going to write that parent a ticket for an unleashed animal and no rabies vaccine, and then let that child bark at the judge and see what happens. And, you know, and it's kind of funny because just my attitude towards these things here, that's been a big deterrent from people doing that. I heard people were trying to tell me, oh, they got kitty litter in your school. And I said, call the health department. That's a big health department violation. Give them something to do rather than making you mask, you know? So there's ways we can fight this and with common sense, and we'll win it.
Common sense is pretty rare. My son works at a college, and it was interesting. He has been there for about 8 years now, but they had the restrooms there, and they made them all unisex restrooms. And what they did is they took the urinals out of the men's restrooms, and that was how they made them unisex. And I said, for the life of me, I'm trying to figure that one out. When these people, they believe that. They couldn't find water jumping out of a boat.
Well, yeah, it's biblical. I mean, Bible warns us this is coming.
Yeah. John, do you want to open up? Let some other people ask some questions.
Yeah, we can start to take questions. Again, let me just make the announcement. We've got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 people in the queue for questions. Anybody else wants to get into the queue? If you're on a phone, it's a *6 and 1. And if you've got an app or a browser that you're coming in on, there should be a button there to enter the queue. All right, we'll take our first question. It's Ross. You got the mic. Go right ahead.
Can you hear me?
We can hear you, Ross. Go right ahead.
I have a question about, should we get rid of the federal, the federal land management act?
Land patents? What are you talking about, Ross?
Oh, the act that controls the government, that they can hold land in the state of Oregon or any state in the West.
Yeah, you're talking about the federal control of land.
Yes.
Throughout all of the United States, and out west particularly, they really seize control of a lot of land. But Sheriff, I don't know if you want to respond to that.
Yeah, I've been to some training on that. There was a National Sheriff's Association, and then there was a National Constitutional Sheriff's Association that they flew me all the way out to Vegas to share this with me. And I think we've got one little sliver of federal land here in Berry County. But it's up to the states to go take that. There's a whole book on it, but it's something like the federal land grab. And there's a couple retired teachers that started doing a research paper on this, and they couldn't believe what they found. And if you go look at the 13 original states, and I forgot what the law is on it, what the name of it is.
The Equal 40 Doctrine, what they call it.
The what doctrine?
But you go look at the Mississippi East, and most of the land is owned by the states. You go Mississippi West, most of it's owned by the federal government. Now, how can that be if you're going to be equal with the other, especially the first 13 original states? And that's basically what they were talking about. Arizona, a while back, they were trying to pass some legislation to take over the national parks that they had out in Arizona. The people themselves shot it down. It's like they wanted the national or federal government to control that.
Like Yellowstone and Yosemite and all that then, huh?
Yeah. So the states just need to take that land. It's rightfully theirs. They have to, the federal government, I think there's 4 or 5 clauses in there on what they can own land, what it's for.
Defense
buildings.
Yeah.
It's for military purposes, for like militia or those stuff.
Yeah. They weren't supposed to be in the park business. They weren't supposed to be in the reservoir business.
Is that they are violating the Section 8 and also Article 4 of the Constitution?
Well, I'm not sure what the sheriff, local county sheriffs, could do on that. Are you
other than educate the public?
What paragraph are you talking about there, Ross, in Article 4?
I think it's past 3 of 10. I don't remember exactly what section is in, but past 3 of Article 4.
Sorry, well, I'll read through it. I'll pipe that in back to
the dispose of land. Dispose of the land.
Well, we'll certainly have to look into that one, so, but I don't think we can solve that right now.
Congress shall have the power to dispose of and make all needful rules and regulations respecting the territory or other property belonging to the United States, and so on. But, of course, that would be in territories. It wouldn't be in states, though. Is that what you were talking about, though?
Yes.
Yeah, but that would be in territories. It wouldn't be in states. Yes. It's not giving them any powers.
That's the problem. When the state of Oregon was admitted in 1859, they treated it as territory for the federal government to keep in the state of Oregon when they become states.
So what you're saying is that they were taking control of certain territories, and when they became a state, they maintained control of certain territories.
Yes.
Okay. Gotcha.
Yeah, that was a common practice where they would put that in the agreement.
I feel like that's still a violation.
Well, absolutely. I think we all agree with that. All right, you got anything else, Ross?
No, that's it.
Okay, thank you.
Thanks for calling, Ross.
We'll go to our next caller. Let's see.
Hello. Exactly.
Give us your first name and your state.
Sean, California.
Oh, yeah, I recognize your voice. Sean from California.
Good luck.
Yeah. So, Jan, when I logged on, I heard you trying to clarify my question. So, just to restate, my husband was arrested and incarcerated in 1987, yes, for a life sentence for kidnapping. And we obviously know his rights were violated. He was not indicted by a grand jury. He did not have a jury of his peers. So my question is, what could I do to motivate the sheriff either in the county where he was arrested, because he's now serving in a different county, which is actually the reddest county in California, Lassen County. What can I do to motivate them to see about getting involved? Like, if
he's
I were to call you...
He's not in a state prison? He's in a county prison?
Well, he's located in a state prison within Lassen County.
Oh, okay. All right. I misunderstood.
Yeah. So he's in the Department of Corrections, California Department of Corrections, but it's in Lassen County.
So a state facility, then.
Yeah, first of all, you're in California, and my understanding is the sheriff may be elected, but it's not a constitutional office. So that'd be my first thing I would do is go get that constitution amended and make that sheriff a constitutional office. That gives him power all the way down to the common law.
Mm-hmm.
So I should say all the way up to the common law, right? Yeah. So... To get him motivated, boy, how big is that county? How many different directions is he being pulled? Because I got 63,000 people in my county, and I have a hard time keeping up with the different directions I'm being pulled.
Okay, well, if I were to call you, so you've already, like, shot my balloon out of the air by reminding me that I live in California and that the sheriff here is going to be very different from where you are. But if I were to call you and tell you that my husband is incarcerated in your county unlawfully and has been for 40-plus years, what would you do?
I'd ask you to bring me whatever documentation you got to prove it.
Okay.
Did he go through a jury trial? You said no?
No.
See, that makes it a denial of due process. And that's federal level, and bring in the fact that he's never been convicted by a trial by jury to begin with.
No.
But before that, he never was indicted. You can't. The Constitution is clear on the indictment requirements. You have to be indicted, and even if you plead guilty, you still have to go through the process. Okay. And the grand jury still has to hear it in order to open a case up, and the jury the trial jury, the petit jury, has to hear everything, even if they plead guilty, and then they make really the decision. Unfortunately, it's been so long since a jury has made any kind of a real decision concerning, for instance, what the penalty might be, because they got not only the right to hear the facts and the law, but they also have the unalienable right to make the decision on the penalty, and not necessarily with a focus on prison. I mean, in some cases, of course, people have to go to prison. There's no getting away from that. But a lot of cases, people don't belong in prison. And if they had to do some kind of a concern about them, watching them in some way, they can put them under house arrest. We got the technology for that, too. But, yeah, you have to take that into the feds.
Okay. And, John, before I get cut off, he was finally able to get that affidavit notarized and mailed it to you only recently. You will either be receiving it or have just received it.
All right. I'll take a look at it.
Thank you.
Yeah, without knowing very much on that case at all, that it's a hard one for me to answer. But if this due process was violated, that's big, because what I'm experiencing is not many people understand due process. And it's your one of your fundamentals of common law.
Well, and the fact of the matter is his due process rights were violated because he was arrested, sentenced, and incarcerated without any due process.
Well, exactly. And the case is so old, you have a good chance of winning.
Now, one of the best cases I've seen handled by a jury was the Antrim County case, and that was the three guys that were in charge of that plot against the governor. And the jury requested something to do with they wanted to hear part of that testimony all over again. It was late in the evening, and the judge says, we'll get it for you tomorrow. Well, tomorrow came, and the jury made the same request, or the transcript, that's what I'm trying to say. They made a request for the transcript, and the judge says, you have enough to make a determination. You're not getting it. So they went on out, they're gone, I think they said about an hour, and come back in with not guilty verdicts on them all. And I thought it was a big middle finger to that judge, but really what it was is, the judge is violating the defendant's due process. The jury wanted something, and he refused to get it to him. So I applaud the jury for taking that stand.
God love him.
Okay, we'll take our next caller then. Thanks, Sean.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, it looks like Rick, you got the mic. Button didn't work. Hang on a second. Okay, Rick, you got the mic. What state are you from, Rick?
Okay, this is Rick Martin, Constitutional Law Group. Question I have is, how do we force the courts to start using a grand jury? This is something that is very, very important to cases I'm working, is due process of law requires a grand jury. Why is it that grand juries are being denied before moving into filing charges, the prosecutors filing charges against people without due process of law?
Well, that's all part of that progressive movement. How are you doing, Rick?
I'm doing well, my friend. Good to hear your voice.
Yeah, I wasn't even sure you were alive. I hadn't heard from you in a couple of years.
Well, I'm handling a case right now with due process violations. So, it was actually a state trooper that beat up, brought her face first down to the ground on having an expired license plate. Yeah, this is Dr. Heather Lee's case I'm dealing with right now as we speak.
Okay. What state?
We're being shut down right now by the appeals court. So I'm working towards
which state?
Michigan.
Michigan. Oh, okay.
Yep. I just recently came back to Michigan to try to help this case out.
So the appeals court.
But anyway, to answer that question, this is a progressive thing that's been going on for years. Where, what was his name? 1913 president Woodrow Wilson. He's a professor, and all the progressives think that rather than the common man making these decisions, they needed experts to make these decisions for the electeds. And this is how we, that it's how it snowballed into what we got today. Rather than a jury of the common man, they wanted these experts in law indicting you. And it's, how do you say, it's hard to get back out of that and get back into the common law.
And I agree with you. Full-heartedly, I agree with you. But as far as, you know, due process of law requires certain aspects to be taken before they can move forward with a case. And as you and I both agree, is we have gotten so lost in process, and that's what I'm dealing with right now, is they're saying, well, you have to follow MCL, blah, blah, blah. And it's like, yeah, wait a minute. What about the merits of the case? Well, we can't hear the merits until you do our process correctly. That's what I'm stuck with right now, my brother.
No, I'm sure. Yeah. That's why you pay these attorneys $500 an hour.
Are you taking it up to the Supreme Court?
I'm sorry, John, go ahead.
Yeah, I was wondering if he's taking it up to the Supreme Court. You said you went through the appeals process.
We're going to the Superior Court next.
Superior.
Within the state, or you're going federal?
State, then. Okay.
Well, we haven't exhausted our state avenue as of yet.
Okay. All right.
So we're not going to jump the gun yet.
If it is a denial of due process, you can go right to the Fed right away.
You think so?
Oh, absolutely, because it's a constitutional violation. They have a right to hear it. They have to hear it. They're supposed to champion the Constitution for the people, and that's what makes it a case that they can hear. If you bring any issue concerning the case into the federal court, they'll throw it out. But if you stay right focused on the constitutional issue, a denial of due process, which is the key to winning most cases, that they have to hear it.
Well,
but you have to start from the federal level. You have to go to the federal courts first.
Yeah, I'm assuming I'd probably have to deal with Lansing on that issue. Lansing, Michigan is where the federal court is, if I'm not mistaken.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, if you want to give me a call or something, maybe we could talk about it. I can assist you on it, maybe.
Absolutely. We'll do that.
Okay, send me an email with your information. Just send it to nla@nationallibertyalliance.org, and then make sure your phone number's in there. We'll try to talk sometime this week.
Absolutely. All right, my friends. God bless you, and stay safe out there.
Thank you, Rick.
Thanks for the call. Okay, we'll take our next caller. Anybody else wants to get into the queue, *6 and 1 if you're on a phone. Should be a button if you're on an app or a browser. Next person is... Derek, it looks like. What state you from, Derek?
Yes. I just wanted to know if they have opening for jury administrators.
Yeah, if you're interested in becoming a jury administrator, once you become a member, there is a button that you can check off as you become a member to be a jury, as an administrator. Of course, those opportunities aren't open yet until we win in the Supreme Court, which is what we've been doing for quite a few years. We're still trying to fight to get to the Supreme Court on this issue of bringing us back to the Constitution and for the people then to be able to take back control of their right as jurists, as administrators, because clearly the government cannot be in control of the grand jury. That's just a problematic thing, of course, and we see that all the time. They've even brought it to the point where they require a signature of the prosecutor alongside the jury foreman in order to make it valid, which is absurd. And I don't know if that's the case all over, but that is a case that's in many places. So that's a major problem.
You know what we have to do? We have to make sure that the people on the website, there's tons of information, and everybody in NLA should get on the website and read all about juries and stuff like that and find out how it's supposed to work. Because, you know, a lot of people I know, they'll try to get off the jury. They'll do anything they can do to get off a jury. I said, get on the jury. You know what I mean? And then, as Dar said, they won't give you the information. Vote not guilty.
There you go. But anyway, if you want to be an administrator, again, it's a job that we're not ready to even work with yet. We're trying to work that out, but first we have to take our courts back, and that's the big issue. But once you sign up and you check that box and you have to start taking all of our courses, in order to become a jury administrator, you need to take all of our courses, most of which are free. And there's a couple of courses that we require people be a premier member to take, and that's given $5 a month or more. Most people can afford that. If you can't afford that, we'll just let you go by on that. But you got to get an education, so that's what you need to start now. People that are becoming, who want to become administrators, are working on their education right now.
I've taken all the courses for the all the courses on the online, and I also got the court access aside
okay.
from that.
I'm not
used to the platform yet. It's a little slow sometimes. It's different from YouTube.
Uh-huh.
But it's a ton of information and it's very helpful. I've learned so much. So much.
Yeah, a lot of the courses that have videos in it, unfortunately, I'm not sure that when you take it, you know, like for instance, I paid a premium on YouTube and I paid a premium on Rumble, so I watch their commercials. But I've noticed that if you're going in secondhand into the videos, they put the commercials out on you, and I'm presuming that's what you're talking about on our website. So when you go through the courses, you're being hit with these commercials. Is that what you're talking about?
Yeah, the commercials is one. Then sometimes Rumble is just slow to load. It's just...
Yeah, we had to move over from YouTube to Rumble with everything pretty much because we were being shut down constantly on YouTube. So.
Yeah, I'll make it work.
You know,
Thank you so much.
Courses are up. It may take a little bit to go through waiting for these videos to move through, unfortunately. You know, if I have the time one day, and I'm really extremely busy, but if I have the time one day, maybe we'll pay for the extra space and actually put the videos right up on our website, and there'll be a direct feed down. But it's going to take a lot of work to do.
You know, the thing about this is that there's people out there that want to join work with us that are very, very, very good at that kind of stuff. You know, we don't have to all be good at everything. We just got to be good at something, and we got to get the people that can do that to come in and work with us. You know, I mentioned that before, John. The good news is it's a volunteer organization, and the bad news is it's a volunteer organization. So, I mean, we need more volunteers to volunteer to do what they do best and just encourage them to get out of our way.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. If there's anybody out there that's got this knowledge, I mean, you know, because it takes up too much of my time to do, and I've got other business that I'm working on. But if we do have people out there that might want to do that, we are looking to revamp the website at some point in time to make it more interactive. But that's going to take money. You know, there's only two ways we're going to be able to go professional. One is to hit critical mass. If we hit critical mass, the potential of going professional will happen. Because we'll get a percentage of people enough. And, you know, if you get, let's say, 10,000 people that become members and are giving us $5 a month or more, that's $50,000 a month. And that's enough to go professional. And we'd be able to pay people and really get some business done. The other way, of course, someone with deep pockets that sees what we're doing, recognizes the work and says, hey, I'll support you and give us some serious money. And even through that process, eventually, you know, with that kind of money to seed us with, we would eventually be able to be self-sufficient anyway at some point because we'd be able to pull enough of the populace in order to really maintain the momentum and maintain, of course, being a professional from a professional perspective, getting very much more involved in working with the committees of safety from a counseling's perspective, of course, only. You know, we don't tell people what to do in their own counties. They've got to figure that out. We assist them in every way we can and advise them and give them all the information they want. But the people have to be free and independent, and they have to take care of their business, and they have to become educated.
Dar, have you had a chance to get on the website at all?
Yes. Yes, I've taken all the courses on the website. I've signed up for court access, and I'm taking the courses for court access. I still have to buy the books. Yeah, cause.
Well, just make sure that you check. If you haven't, you can go back into your account, which is on under the blue bar here, right under directory and members. There's my account, and you should be able to go in there to see if you check the box to be be an administrator, you know, a jury administrator, and which is a paid position, of course. And if you can't find a box, you can get a hold of Jan at nationallibertyalliance.org, and I'm sure he'll be able to help you.
And what state were you from?
Oh, Maryland.
Oh, thank you.
You said okay. Maryland?
Any yeah. Any other questions or anything for the sheriff, Derek?
Well, I was just going to tell him there's an attorney in Maryland, Michael Peruca. You get a chance to look him up, look him up. It's I forgot how you spell his last name, but Michael Peruca. He ran for president on, I think it was a U.S. Taxpayers Party a few years back. Michael Peruca.
Good guy, obviously.
Oh, obviously, yes. He was part of the CSPOA for quite a while.
Uh-huh.
All right, Derek, anything else? Otherwise, we'll move on to
the next one. Thank you so much. I'll just listen on.
Okay, thank you. Okay, we're going to take our next caller, Jim from Pennsylvania. How you doing, Jim? You got the mic. Jim from Pennsylvania, you got the mic.
Okay, I'm unmuted.
You're unmuted, yep.
Thank you, Sheriff Thor, for your service. I have several questions, but I guess I'll start with the most important one to me is how would you go about choosing your deputies, the people that are closest to you? I yield.
Well, one of the problems we have is we can't find anybody who wants to be a deputy. Nobody wants to work nights, weekends, holidays anymore. And the 8 years we had of Obama bashing law enforcement, that didn't help. So we have a regular hiring process, and they have to fill out a background check information form for us, which is several pages thick. And we dig into you quite deeply to see what kind of character you have.
But, Sheriff, do you know that you don't know them personally? I mean, that would be very helpful, wouldn't it? I yield.
Yes and no. I do not like hiring friends or family members of friends because they're going to let you down, and I see down the road where you're going to not be friends anymore.
Okay, if I may, I believe that communicating with other sheriffs would be very important. Are you able to do that and contact other sheriffs individually and have a contact or even a relationship with them? I yield.
Yeah, I've contacted sheriffs all over the country, and you get some relation, professional relationship. It's not like we go out fishing or anything like that, and it's a matter of having home time also when you're doing your sheriffing. So it's important. Like me, I like going up to a cabin up in the UP, up in the Upper Peninsula, just to get away from everybody for a while, just to recharge my batteries. So, yeah, I have relationships with some of the sheriffs and some from out of state even.
Yeah. I think it'd be very important to educate the other sheriffs. That was my question.
Oh, absolutely. But they got to be willing to accept it. We are trained, and John, you and I got a friend by the name of, well, are we allowed to say Jack's name on this thing?
Yeah.
Anyways, he came out with this statement, and he says, if you ever notice, less than 1% of our population in this country are attorneys, but they control over 90% of what we do. That includes our law enforcement and our police academies. They won't let us bring training in unless it's training that is brought by an attorney. I was trying to get into the academies and into MCOLs, which is Michigan Coalition of Law Enforcement Standards, the training on what to watch for in election fraud. And they said, oh, it sounds great, but you have to have an attorney be able to be a presenter or attorney who's helping you do the work. So what I'm saying is that's kind of a conveyor belt cop thing where you go through the academy, they teach you how to handle a crime scene, they teach you how to handle a domestic, they teach you how to handle a murder, they teach you how to do a traffic stop, they teach you how to do all this stuff as the attorneys tell you how to do it.
Sheriff Thor, what are some of your priorities for your office?
One of our priorities is trying to get caught up on staff. COVID hit us. Like I said, the 8 years of Obama, it's hard, really hard finding people who want to do corrections or law enforcement. So that's one of our main focuses, is trying to get caught up. And it's very difficult, especially a county our size. We don't pay as much as the big counties. And some of the stuff the kids expect today, I would never have dreamed of asking for when I first started.
Sheriff, it does seem like you have a lot of enemies, and from my understanding of being involved in government and that, how do you deal with it? I mean, that's a general question. I'm just wondering. It just seems like what they did, for example, what they did with Representative Tom Massey in Kentucky, they spent $32 million on one race.
Yeah.
It seems like they're going to come after you, is what it seems like.
Oh, they've been after me for years.
What can
you just got to stand up. And like I said, what I learned is people will follow courage. If you stand up to what you know is wrong and be loud about it, people will follow.
That was Walking Tall, I believe, wasn't it?
I didn't hear you.
The movie Walking Tall, that was basically what happened there. He stood up to the sheriff, he stood up to everybody, and they elected him sheriff. But yeah, you're right. I mean, courage is contagious.
Yes.
Well, Sheriff, I guess my question, my other question was the leadership. You just commented on that. Could you repeat that? I mean, you're saying you get a good leader and the people will follow. And that's what I'm looking for, because I don't consider myself a leader, even though I never feel like I'm confident enough to be that big of a leader. I mean, I try, but I always look for that leadership, and I just don't find it in my city or my state.
Part of being a good leader is you have to put good people below you. So my undersheriff, he has to be a leader. My undersheriff, I've had three undersheriffs, and before I hire them, I ask them, are you able to come into my office and tell me when I'm wrong? Are you able to raise your voice at me when I'm not listening to you? And if they tell me no, I said, then I got no use for you. So that's part of the leadership. I used to have on my emails, a great leader knows when to lead and when to get out of the way. You know, I train people to be experts in certain fields. I'm not going to answer those questions. I'll be referring to my expert I have in that field. But I put them into that position because I was confident that they were competent to handle that job.
Okay, we're going to take our next caller now. Jim, if you want to ask another question, you can get back into the queue. But we do have a few people in the queue. It's starting to get late. I want to make sure we get to everybody.
Thank you, Jim.
Thank you.
Okay, we're going to take our next caller. It looks like, is that Klaus? Maybe you could tell us what state you're from. You got the mic, 507 area code.
I'm here. Can you hear me?
Yep, go right ahead. First name, your state.
Chris Daniels, Minnesota.
Minnesota. Go ahead,
yep.
Chris.
Minnesota. Well, I just heard the guy talking earlier about the judges, you know, and how they intervene, and trial by jury and a jury trial, they're two different things. One, the judge can overrule it, and you can't overrule the jury trial, you know what I mean? So you want the one the judge can overrule, because then you could appeal it, and there's double jeopardy. They can't try the same thing twice and win it that way. So just want to add my 2 cents on that one. And then I guess I have a question too. I've been dealing with the sheriffs and police here for 5 years now, and series of unfortunate events. My garage burnt down, my whole house burnt down actually, but they're kind of corrupt around here. And so I'm having trouble where I can't even, if I go on my laptop or any computer, I can't get any word processor to work to print my files, to submit them. Nothing works for me. Like, I can, you know, it's working for my wife. I take the computer and it stops working, you know, or it just doesn't save. And it's been like that for 5 years now. Just curious if anybody else has had that problem and how they get around it.
What kind of computer do you have?
Mac. MacBook Pro.
It's a Mac.
Yeah, I've never heard of that kind of a problem. So, I mean, again, most people have Windows. But yeah. Windows 11 I wouldn't want to get. If you did go to Windows, you'd want to do 10 or earlier.
Well, I'm at a point where they're in my computer and actively like stopping me from trying to do what I'm trying to do. Sounds crazy, but that's what's happening. So.
Well, I wouldn't doubt it. You know, if you're hitting a certain vein there, so to speak, they might do something like that. Everybody's got access to your computer these days. The cloud. I thought the cloud. Anybody who goes up in the cloud, I always thought was crazy. Now cloud is part of the system. But yeah. I stay down to Windows 10, and I've cut them off to be able to upgrade me to anything. They try all the time, but one time they got through and destroyed my whole computer, and I had a copy anyway. I had three copies of mine.
I just rebooted mine, you know, from scratch, started all over,
It's a problem. Huh? But do you have a question for Sheriff?
I don't think so. Not that I can think of here off the top of my head. I had court this morning and couldn't get my documents in time, but I don't know. Long story, but I'm still working on it here. And I got your book. I read it.
Yeah, we got a lot of,
I like it.
Yeah. We got a lot of courses there that should help you also along, so.
Yep. Thank you. Appreciate it.
Hey, John, you mentioned Double Jeopardy.
Yeah.
And it was always drove me nuts is that Double Jeopardy kicks in when the jury's sworn in. Is that correct?
Well, once the trial takes place, yeah, I would imagine that is the case at that point. We'll do, to come to a conclusion, and then if
and,
you go...
And then if the jury can't decide... To me, the prosecutor couldn't prove their case.
Well, that's a fact, but unfortunately, these days they'll retry you, and that is
exactly that. That's a pet peeve of mine. I'm going, well, how is that not a violation of double jeopardy?
Well, no doubt it is. No doubt. You know, look, it takes all 12 to convict. I mean, if 11 convicts and one refuses, well, then they just got to hang out till they can convince that 11th, or if they have to change their position and come in. You know, just because they're a hung jury doesn't mean that you have to start all over, or that the judge takes some kind of a control over it, or makes some opinion and decision, because all of that is a denial of due process.
Right.
In Minnesota here, we've had the judges for all the fraud that's going on. The small ends, they were getting prosecuted with a jury, and they were getting convicted, and then the judge was overruling them. You know, just overruling. Nope, going free.
A judge
cannot do that.
That's what they're doing. Yep, that's the difference between trial jury and jury by trial. You know, I got it backwards, but yeah.
Are you saying that the judge is overruling a conviction or overruling, that they're letting the person go?
They're minimizing a sentence, minimizing the sentence down to nothing. Yep.
Yeah, you see, therein is another problem. Again, you know, the jury has to decide what's going to be going on to trial, and you can't add anything to it. They do it all day long, though, anyway, but it's unlawful. The prosecutor can't add more things. If they discover more things, they got to go back to a grand jury to agree to that, to be part of that particular case. And at the end of the day, of course, the trial jury makes the final decision. The judge has nothing to say about whatever that decision is. And again, that would be, again, a violation of law, due process in particular, of course, overruling, the due process that has already taken place.
Well, that's what I'm saying. That's why they renamed it. You know, they got two of them. One's trial by jury, and a jury trial. We're guaranteed one of them where the jury makes a decision, and the other one, the judge makes a decision.
Yeah, well, that's just a play on words. It's all that. It's all a fraud.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. You want to pipe in on that, Sheriff?
No, I was just going to say what you just said, to play on words.
Yeah. All right, we'll take our next caller. If you want to ask more questions, you can get back into the queue because we do have two more people and we want to get them through. And so if you want to get back in the queue, you go right ahead. Meanwhile, we'll take our next caller. Let's see. It is someone from Texas. You can give us your first name from Texas, 214
yes,
number.
Hi. My name's Mike. And I was listening intently on each comment and making notes. And back when I had a question, I knew the question, but now I have forgotten. So there's a lot going on here in Texas legally, and in Dallas, we do not have a constitutional sheriff. This is one of the most liberal cities in the entire nation. I went to a class by Chris Ann Hall. I'm sure you all are well aware of Chris Ann Hall.
She's great.
I'm sorry?
She's great. Go ahead.
Yeah. I dig her. So she said that there is a way for us to get constitutional sheriffs in a county, and then somehow with a small percentage of the population work our way up to getting all 254 counties in Texas filled with constitutional sheriffs. Do you all know of, does that ring a bell? Does that prompt any memory?
If you had 254 committees of safety working hard in a state, you would have that.
I'm sorry?
If you had 254 counties and 254 committees of safety working in those counties with active people working in those counties, you would have that.
Hmm. Okay. So yeah, this could be a...
Are you familiar with committees of safety?
Vaguely. And
well,
so
committees of safety are the true committeemen. Our founding fathers were all part of the Committee of Safety. You know, we went through the Revolution through Committee of Safety, the Declaration of Independence, the First Continental Congress, the Second Continental Congress. All of that was decided by the Committee of Safety, the debates, the Committee of Safety, the execution at the beginning of our government, Committees of Safety, the process to control our government, Committee of Safety. But then at some point in time, they statutorized it, and they call it the committeemen. And they've created the two parties. You got the Democrats and you got the Republicans, and they've taken control of that process. The people need to do it all on their own, just start a committee of safety. And once you get a committee of safety going, then you could put a sheriff in there that does have the desire to do the job right and, you know, understand the common law, learn the law of the land, and be a constitutional sheriff. And that's the key. Now, there are places where sheriffs have... They don't have sheriffs that are constitutional, just as Sheriff Dar had mentioned before. They don't even have sheriffs out in Connecticut, for instance. And there's only about 8 counties, I think, out in Connecticut. We do intend on taking up that battle, but we can't take that battle up until we win the courts on the federal level. And if we can win the courts on the federal level to bring our courts of justice, then we can go into Connecticut and deal with that problem there and various other problems throughout the country. Because, you see, without a sheriff, there is no law enforcer. We've got code enforcement officers, but we don't have law enforcement officers. And nobody can get rid of the sheriff. It's part of the common law process. It's like there's no sheriff. There's no common law. Therein is the problem. We could beat that in a court of law, but it would have to be on the federal level. But the thing is we'd have to win back the federal courts first, and that's our battle at this point. Sheriff, you got anything to add on to that?
Yeah, just giving an example how bad the federal courts are. My attorney is a Patrick Byrne's attorney. Patrick Byrne is a very wealthy man. He used to own Overstock.com. He's one of them that stood up to Dominion voting systems, and Dominion turned around and sued him. Well, the judge in D.C., that they're, I think it's a magistrate, actually, as they, you got to understand a little bit here, Dominion was one of the systems used by Venezuela when they developed Smartmatic, which was the vote flipping software.
Yes.
But, so anyhow, that judge that's hearing the case was Maduro's attorney.
Mm-hmm.
So this is the problem we're having with the judicial system, even at the federal level. That judge could recuse herself on that case because of that link to Maduro. Maduro was the president of Venezuela. He's in our custody now for the federal level.
Yeah.
And it's weird stuff like that is happening all around the country.
Mm-hmm.
So we have to go out and get these judges, or their leadership anyways, start recognizing these things and start enforcing the rules.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that part is also up to we the people, as well as what you mentioned earlier as to the committees of safety here in Texas getting our constitutional sheriffs back up and running. Again, that goes back to we the people. Is that both, are both those counts right?
Are both what right?
The fact that for the councils or the committees of safety here in Texas becoming constitutional again, which
The committee safety is we the people. Unalienable right to have government by consent is expressed and exercised through the committees of safety. There is no other way. Okay, it's the people on the grassroots level within their counties to take control of their government, starting from the government that is right there before them. You know, your towns, your villages, your county governments, your city governments, your state government. You got to take all that back. You got to take back all the schools. You got to get all the school districts within your county. It's a big job, but if you got enough people working at it, of course, you know, many hands make light work, and that's the key. It's the only way. You can't have government by consent without having committees of safety working together to exercise that government by consent, because one person can't do anything, but a handful of people can do a lot.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Okay. And then,
but with that,
of course,
go ahead. Final, because I got one other person I want to get to.
Yep.
But go ahead, final points.
So the comments on the federal court trouble and Maduro, again, that goes back to we the people and our efforts, right?
Well, everything goes back to we the people. We wouldn't be in the process. The problems we have today would not exist if the people were involved in committees of safety going all the way back from, you know, when they started to discontinue them and really put them over to the political parties. And that's what the minions of the New World Order did, which is the bar attorneys. And they've taken control of that whole process. They had to take control of the political process. They had to take control of the judicial process. They had to take control of the administrative, the education, the economy. They've taken control of everything. There's nothing that goes on that they don't have control over, and that is the problem.
Yeah.
So we have to fix that. And I can tell you, I do believe that Trump is really on that trail. He is going to take whole system down, and again, we're working with the courts, and we're hoping that the administration is working with us to bring our courts back to courts of record again.
Thank you. I will be doing my part in that effort.
Okay. Well,
thank you.
Coming to our Monday meetings, and we'll teach you how to get a committee of safety going. Sheriff,
perfect.
Did you respond?
I said thank you. You said you're going to do your part. Thank you.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, sir.
Okay, we're going to take our last caller. We have one other person in the queue. It's Michael from Michigan. Go right ahead. You got the mic.
Okay, where in the world is Mike Niblick from Michigan? Hi, guys.
Hey, Mike.
I think somebody might recognize my name there.
It says Mike.
Mike Niblick, yeah. Courts are definitely the subject of the day, aren't they?
You appear so, yeah.
Because they're attorneys.
but I'm far from being. Well, I'm an attorney. I'm maybe attorney towards common law and anything else. Did anybody recognize the name Bill Thornton?
Yeah.
Yep.
Well, we're talking about courts, but if I think we have to come to the common understanding that we are the courts, the people are the courts,
right.
And we consider judges having any kind of job other than being administrators of the courtroom, that's when we're failing too, because their black robes do not give them jurisdiction over a common person on a common law. And so when we enter a court, if we enter the court as a defendant, we are in their court. But I believe wholeheartedly with Bill Thornton that if you're going to go to court, you have to enter the court as a plaintiff.
Right.
You are the court, common law.
Correct.
So does any of that make sense, or does that?
Well, it absolutely does, and herein is the problem. The problem is the judges think that they can make decisions in courts of law. They have no part of a court of law. The only place that they have any power or authority is in a court of equity. And a court of equity deals with legislative law, and legislative law deals with the people operating within commercial activities or working in government agencies. That's all about. But once you go into a court of law, which is the people's court, with, if it's a criminal thing, it's up to the people to decide whether they're going to indict or not. And if they do indict, then it's up to the people to make the decision on the law and on the facts and on the conclusion of the case. There's no judge. All judges are also, they have the ability to come into a court only as sort of and make sure, like a traffic court, to make sure that things are wrong. So, yeah, but they're not to come in as a judge, okay? But they do. They come in and they actually make decisions, and they actually put people in jail, and they do all kinds of things that they don't have the power or the authority to do.
But doesn't that judge have to, a civil judge, doesn't he have to prove jurisdiction?
Well, no. Absolutely. But a civil judge, if you're going to go in, it's going to use it as arbitration. Then you can use a judge as the arbitrator, and that is the thing. But if you say nope, I want to exercise my right of a trial by jury, which as long as it's over $20, which is what the Constitution says, the judge is out and the people are in.
Mm-hmm. But who does our jury really have to be? Who are they? They should be our peers. Not to pick the court members.
The people within your county. That's your peers.
Yes. Yes. It doesn't quite work out that way when if you do get to a jury trial in the civil government.
The one mistake that Thornton made, and there are actually a couple, but one particularly is that, he claims to be the king of the court. He's teaching people that they're the king of the court. We're part of the king's bench if we're the deciders in a court, in other words, part of the jury. But Jesus Christ is the king of our church, and the jury is the representative of that king. And that's how our lawful system is set up, starting right from the Declaration of Independence. You know, we're under the laws of nature, and of nature's God. So,
Common law, common sense, natural law.
And that's it. Common law is nothing more than common sense. I don't know, Sheriff, do you want to pipe into any of this?
Hi, Dar.
Hi.
You picked the wrong person for the last question.
No, I'm good with it. I'm good with it.
Uh-huh. So yeah. I don't necessarily think that I'm putting myself in any kind of position where I think that I'm the king of the court.
Right.
The position I think I put myself into, that our Lord, which is the lawmaker of the heavens and the earth, and of course, who wouldn't be, because he created it, is it simply common sense and natural law? The golden rule, do unto others as you would have them do unto you. And how did we get so screwed up? Was it something to do with the Act of 1861?
Laziness, really, but that's my thought.
That?
Anytime you hear an act, you got to beware, especially at the federal level. The Social Security Act, go read the original act, then go read what it reads today. An act can be amended. at the will of the whoever's in power, the legislature.
So I always hate these acts that come on up. The common law, to me, is the way to go. If we stuck with that, we could probably cut back to these part-time legislatures and kind of live a happier life.
Well, the word
an act can also be nullified by the jury itself. So.
Well, the word legislature, isn't that the hatchet man right there to a free man?
Say that again?
Isn't the word legislature, isn't that the hatchet to a free man?
Well, I've never heard that before, but...
I never heard it either.
Well, I've never used that before either.
Yeah, the legislators have certain powers. In the federal level, they got, and pretty much, it's not too much different on the state levels either, but at the federal level, they got 18 powers. We the people ordained and established the Constitution for them. We're the lawgivers. You know, God himself is the great lawgiver, of course, and he's given us power and authority over the government. We have government by the consent of the people. That's the structure. And so we John, made the law, and they have to be obedient to that law.
Excuse me. John, is there a difference between a people and a citizen?
I don't see any, no.
Hmm.
But I'm very careful to go into the court and call myself one of the people, you know. But a citizen is, the word citizen is used 7 times in the Constitution.
But you believe there's a way to enter the court as a plaintiff as opposed to a defendant?
Yeah, one of the people in your state coming in this court of record sues mm-hmm. or whoever countersues or whatever the case may be. That's the beginning of opening a court of record and trial by jury to be put up top also.
Okay. All right. Hey, well, yeah.
I'll tell you this, Mike. You can vote your way into socialism, but you have to shoot your way out. No.
Well, you're not preaching to the choir on that one.
It's just about ended, but I got to tell a dark story before we leave here, this thing, because it was one of the first things. We used to have a meeting at the sheriff's office, and Dar mentioned that he had given his deputies authority to, for instance, let's say a 17-year-old kid took mom and dad's car and out there burning rubber and whatever like that, speeding. Instead of giving him a ticket, that's what Dar expressly said to us, he says he gave the deputy authority to just give the guy a card and say, you got to come down to the sheriff's office with your mom and dad and explain what you did. So instead of giving a ticket and having insurance jump up $1,000 or $2,000, he had to face the wrath of his mom and dad. And that to me was common sense. That's common law. And that's really made me appreciate Dar way back when. So I just got to tell you that.
That makes a whole lot of sense.
Hey, Dar, if a crime is committed within your county, what is the primary thing, the description or word that would make it a crime? If a crime is committed, if one of your deputies arrests somebody and they say that they have committed a crime, there must be what? There must be a victim, right?
Right.
Okay. That was only my point right there.
Well, that is deep. Look, we do have one other person. We'll give them a moment. Maybe got Brent, not Brent, Brett. Brett, what state you're from, and we'll give you a minute or two.
Hello?
Yep, go right ahead, Brett. You got the mic.
Yeah, Wisconsin. I was just hearing someone had mentioned that the way to come into a court is through a plaintiff. So does that mean never responding as a defendant?
No, you come in with a countersuit.
I'm sorry?
You come in with a countersuit. The counter sue is what the point is. At least that's on a civil end. On a criminal end, that's kind of difficult to deal with that.
So in the case of traffic and as a defendant, would you counter sue that or?
Well, no. In the case of traffic, you can make the case that they don't have the power or the authority to give you due process and they need to cease and desist. We teach that. We also have some free information on that under our education tab. It's Education Starts Here. If you want to learn more about that, maybe you come in next Monday and we could talk about it and get into more detail. But basically, the bottom line is you can serve the papers, and they have to prove that they have due process. They can't prove that. And they're probably going to just ignore that paperwork, and then the next step is to move it to federal court for cause. And you can only argue the point that they don't have due process. Forget about a ticket. Forget about what anything that case, anything to do. You want that case. You want that court to cease and desist because they have no power or authority over you to be able to give you due process. Now, they have to come in and prove that they can give you due process, and that's how you can win in those cases. You got a question for the sheriff before we close down?
No, that will be all because of the time.
All right, Sheriff Dar, if you got anything final to say before we close down?
Oh, I just appreciate you inviting me on again, and it's comforting hearing from people from all around the country.
Yeah, well, we appreciate having you too.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
Okay, we'll see everybody next week, and next week, Lord willing. Good night, everybody. Thanks for coming.
Thank you, Dar.
All right, good night.